Good evening, everybody, and thanks for tuning in. You're listening to the inaugural Words Out Loud podcast brought to you by COVID-19 from not-so-sunny Ballarat. My name is Jason Narung. I am one of your co-hosts. I am here with Kirsten McDermott, who is usually our tech wizard on the nights.
I'm still the tech wizard, but now I get to talk, which is fun. I don't get to talk a lot on the live gigs. I'm usually manning equipment.
Yeah, so we've cobbled this together from our contributors in their homes, on their phones, whatever, sending us in some contributions that draw on the two themes from our cancelled March edition, which was Road to Nowhere, and our cancelled April edition, which was themed Underneath the Radar. And yes, astute listeners, we are running off an 80s song themes for our themes this year. So we'll be keeping that going.
Yes, but the themes are not compulsory. So you can send us anything you like on any topic. We use the themes mainly as writing prompts. We have a lot of people who like the prompts. And of course, Jason keeps a little official, unofficial point system. And there is sometimes a surprise prize at the end of the year for someone who has kept to the theme the most often. But again, it's not compulsory. So if you'd like to send us something, we'd love to hear it. You can send it to our email address, which is Jason.
WOL Ballarat, so WOL Ballarat at gmail.com, but you will find all the details on the website.
And if you're listening to this, you probably found the website, because otherwise I don't know where else this turned up. So yeah, send us your piece. MP3 files are the best. I can convert other audio, but MP3 would be much appreciated. However you want to record it, doesn't have to be professional audio quality, on your phone, on a digital recorder, however you can make the recording and get it to us, we can do something with that. There's just a couple of rules for those submitting. We would like you to keep to a maximum of 5 minutes, and it can be multiple pieces as long as together they're no longer than 5 minutes. Also, make sure it is your own work. If you are reading someone else's work, we just need you to get their written permission and forward that to us as well. And the only other rule or guideline really is, on our live nights, it's kind of anything goes in terms of content. Because this is less ephemeral, we're asking people to keep the content to a generous PG rating. So if you've written something that's likely to make a 10-year-old burst into tears or not sleep that night, you can maybe keep that till we return to the actual physical stage.
Rightio. Well, that's got the upcoming editions covered. Let's get back to this edition.
Indeed.
We have 8 performers tonight, and we're absolutely stoked with that response. We're also going to throw in a piece each just to round out the evening. But to take us into the beginning, our first performer for the evening, we're very happy to have with us Earl Livings, a wonderful Melbourne poet who has occasioned to visit our stage in Ballarat, and it's always been a pleasure. Now, Earl has delivered a poem based on a photograph. You'll find the photograph and a couple of others that people have submitted with their works for the evening on the blog post. So scroll on down, because, it adds to it. So Earl's piece, a travel poem called Lakeview at Neuschwanstein Castle. Here it is.
This poem was written quite recently, though it is based on a trip many years ago. It's called Lakeview at Neuschwanstein Castle, for Joe. The photo says it all. Two people in a rowboat, not quite halfway across Alpsea Lake. Sun shimmer on silent interweaving blues. Barely a ripple. A sprinkle of ducks near the shore. Crisscross of tall mountains on the other side, receding with forest and cloud haze. And behind the camera, the two of us languid on a wooden bench, eating a packed lunch of cheese, bread, tomato, foraged from a Munich market, drinking beer bartered from our bus driver, watching the boat, listening to the wind shiver golden leaves, waiting for our tour of the fairy tale castle you have always adored since Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. This, the best of many elations on our first trip together overseas, goosebumps of discovery and chance in strange cities opening vistas, our hands never far from touch, even in sleep. Fairy tales emerge from and tell of timeless worlds, hidden wonders, rewards for hard work and trust in clever bird or magic gift from the least expected. That happy ever after glow like the sudden glimpse of white spires through trees. We finish our lunch, saunter along gleaming paths towards one castle of destiny, seek out each other's hands, welcome this silence of breathing together, leaves of light, leaves of light. Thank you.
Thank you, Earl. It's always a pleasure to have Earl along to Words Out Loud. We don't get him here often enough, so I'm glad he was able to send us that poem from afar. Our next performer is Megan J. Riedel, who is a regular at Words Out Loud. She's there almost every month with her fantastic poetry, and she has three poems for us this evening, one of which is COVID-19 based, and it will come as perhaps no surprise to listeners that there are a few of the submissions this evening that touch on that theme. But for now, here's Megan.
I drove from Ballarat to Geelong and I thought the world was ending. Mount Buninyong was obscured by wood smoke and not the romantic, warm and fuzzy hot soup on an oldie-worldie stovetop in a cottage kind of wood smoke, but apocalyptic, quick, quick, quick kind of wood smoke. Hurry, it said. At a lane, the wind turbines were slicing through the dirty sky like so many hot knives through butter, and I knew there were at least a dozen there, but I couldn't see from one to the other. The closest one to the road had a trunk looming up like a futuristic artist's impression of a memory of a tree. Near Meredith, some leadfoot in a beamer overtook me on a bend because everything capitalism taught him was a lie and he just wanted it to end. But waiting for Australia to burn to the ground was too slow a way to die. The billboard on the wayside at Lethbridge said, "How well do you know fire?" Like we're not all so intimate with it. Like we're not breathing in its exhalations on our pillows. Like we're not always awaiting its arrival at our door. Like we're not being fucked even as we burn. And the suburbs of Geelong looked slightly out of focus as I pulled up to the curb and a voice said, "You have arrived at your destination." And I thought, no, I don't think we're even close. My loneliness is afraid of the dark. It scratches at the door when the sun goes down. It's been hidden away all day, sleeping somewhere or frolicking in the long grass. But when night falls, it wants to come inside and sit with me on the couch. My loneliness is so heavy and it likes to stretch out. It likes to rest its head in my lap. It's like a comfy old blanket that doesn't get washed often enough. It likes to be pandered to. My loneliness is a narcissist. It doesn't just sing in the shower. It has full-blown conversations. Sometimes it just longs to hear a voice echoing through the house, and what better voice than its own? It's easier that way, because my loneliness is always right. My loneliness prefers being on the stage to sitting at the back of the theatre. It's better to blind people with its light than to see itself reflected. That's why it likes to party. It finds a room full of people, gets wasted, and pretends that it doesn't exist. My loneliness likes to dress up as a businesswoman. It's a high achiever. It gets shit done. It would work all night if I let it. The soft clicking of fingers on keys is better than the silence, and the cold glow of a laptop screen is better than the dark. And my loneliness is afraid of the dark. And the award goes to. I didn't expect to get or this praise. I don't do this job for the awards, obviously. Helping people is my reward. But it seems I've been deemed essential, which is such an honour, considering growing up I only really ever felt superfluous, the equivalent to a nice hot cup of tea. So this award means a lot. I have a few people to thank. Firstly, my family for encouraging me when I brought fallen hatchlings inside, for giving me baby dolls and Barbie houses, for praising me for being caring instead of smart. Dad, I was always your princess, and I knew that meant I wasn't strong enough to lead, but I was beautiful and kind enough to hold a man's hand while he died. And Mum, for showing me that to be a woman is to be selfless to the point of self-endangerment. You're the reason I became a nurse. Thank you and good night.
And thank you, Megan, for those three wonderful poems. The first, Hurry. The second, My Loneliness. And then, Nurse. Coming up next, we have Rhonda Kotzel with two poems, Road to Nowhere 1 and Road to Nowhere 2. But I assure you, these roads do go somewhere. Please enjoy.
What is a road to nowhere? Do you plan it to end that way? A journey already begun, a destination that's lost its way. A place to go not knowing what is waiting at its end. An escape that had to happen, or something you needed to mend. Where the future is suddenly shaky and a place too hard to bear. Turning back's no longer an option. It's a train wreck back there. This road is a strange new country, blindfolded, unfolding ahead. The road is just one somewhere, and the nowhere another instead. There's lots of roads to nowhere. Letters not answered, calls not returned on the screen, words reaching up from the abyss. Hello? Are you there? Questions asked to empty eyes. Painting spaces turned to the wall. Journeys begun. Destination known and unknown. And yet silence is an answer. Answers unspoken, sunk in indecision or fear. Voices whispering where no one is listening, just practicing how it sounds, put out there. Someone enters a room, turns a forgotten painting from the wall and finds a message on its face. Or late at night, a knock on the door and the police are on your doorstep. And in the pause between silence and speech, the world shifts and the future is now a very alien country. The wheels roll, the road uncurls beneath the foot poised to brake or to accelerate, hands grips ready to steer right, left. We get lost, fall asleep at the wheel, run out of fuel, turn back, leave the car and start walking. In the end, there is no road to nowhere. There is just a road. Even roadkill has moved on.
Thank you, Rhonda, for those two lovely poems, perfectly on theme, Road to Nowhere, which will make Jason very happy. Now, our next performer, Laura E. Gooden, has written one of my very favourite poems. It's not what she's performing tonight, although that is an excellent piece, but she has a poem called To the Person Who Left a Note on My Windshield, which is on YouTube. It's not the best audio quality on YouTube, but I encourage you to persevere. We'll put the link in our show notes because it is an excellent poem and it's one of those very, very special poems that comes into my head on a semi-regular basis due to life circumstances, which I'm sure you'll understand when you go and listen to it. But right now she has something completely different and utterly delightful.
The Monster Tarantella by Laura E. Gooden. Marigold was substantial, overly jovial, large, lanky, all awkward angles. Ballet was attempted. Young men with wispy hair and pained expressions lifted her in teams. At some point, all agreed it should stop. Marigold danced alone across lands of ice and fire, rock and mire. She galumphed by cover of night, listening between each thudding figure for the silvery giggles of the lithe. One night there followed two clumsy children with blotchy faces. The next, a man who muttered to himself and could meet no one's eyes. Then a woman brittle with age and apprehension. Each night more. 100, 1,000. Dancing in their own flawed, fantastical ways. On the day the great sea monster rose, slime-covered, bored, and irritable, the people screamed and hid. The monster traveled across ice and fire, rock and mire, and at last found Marigold. She came forth to meet it, her dancers following, and, occasionally, stepping on one another's toes. Marigold looked the monster up and down and laughed her braying laugh. The monster recoiled, and Marigold and her dancers surged to close the distance. A long moment passed, in which they could all hear each other breathing. Experimentally, the monster moved forward again, and the dancers skipped backward, waving their arms to keep their uncertain balance. The monster stared at the patterns they made, like seaweed, like the tops of waves, like the northern lights. A strange joy swelled within its heart. The monster flung its own arms up and twirled on its clawed and scaly feet. Marigold, seeing at last a dance that befitted her, joined in. One by one, the others took up the wild and unmeasured steps, each in their own irregular way. The moon rose, and thousands danced the monster tarantella.
Yeah, that was a lovely piece from Laura, and I have to agree with Kirsten. I can't see a badly parked car in a car park now without thinking of Laura's windshield poem. Just wonderful. So coming up next, we have three poems from Jenny Frayne. And Jenny has dipped into life in isolation in Ballarat with one of them.
Hello, this is Jenny Frayne. And I've got three poems. The first one is called The Alwaysness of Trees. And I wrote it after driving through the bush one day. Rediscovered it recently and thought, well, it actually is useful to have this poem at this time in the world. So the alwaysness of trees. Their own lives are lived despite us. The murders we inflict cause them to rally. To them, air and earth are sacred. Yet they do not bother with moral superiority. Engagement is their game. They know more than we do about multitudinous species, adaptations, how to make the most of life while you've got it. We can do our worst. We can fully desecrate this earth and air. Yet I tell you, they told me, rustling and waving as they do, they said, we will always be here. So that's that one. And then the second one I wrote as a response to a prompt, because this is April and April is Poetry Month. There are a couple of sites which put up prompts every day for the whole month. And this one is called, the prompt was Time. And I really haven't given this a title yet. But this is, you know, I live in Ballarat near the railway, and this poem is about being isolated in Ballarat at this time. All the time in the world is not as long as my day. You ask me what became of those minutes. I say they each became an eon. Planets came and went. Images on TV occurred as a record of life spent in bites and dots and empty spots. Reflections in a computer screen, a tiny courtyard, white weatherboards, bricks and concrete, hard. Beyond, dark green poplars reaching to a curly sky, lined up, saluting to trains, busily cruising emptily by. That one was workshopped in Daylesford. And then the third one is a very short one. I discovered this form called a doditsu. Dodo itsu. And it's a Japanese form with seven syllables for the first three lines each and then five syllables for the last line. And the themes can be love or work, but not too serious. So this is my love one. When he turned back to me, I could not say the third no, and now there is a permanent yes on both our lips. Thank you very much for listening. That's me, Jenny Frayne. Bye.
Thank you, Jenny, and thank you for introducing me to a new poetic form. I feel the urge to go away and write some dodoitsu, perhaps to bring to the next podcast of Words Out Loud even. So that's something to look forward to, everyone. Up now, we have Jason Narung, and anyone who has attended Words Out Loud on the regular and heard Jason do one of his pieces on the semi-regular, you'll know that now's probably the time to go off and get yourself a handkerchief or a box of tissues, because this isn't going to be the happiest piece. But that's our Jason, and we love him anyway.
So I'll be doing a short reading, a piece that from a project called Reading the Lifeline that Words Out Loud did at Dalesford last year for Words in Winter. I recommend you start practicing now. The HR officer peers over glasses from behind the safety of the desk as though it were a trench wall. But we both know the snipers are out there and it doesn't pay to stick your head up. It's too late for me, surely, to practice. I'm in their sights, clearly. To think all that kowtowing, all those mundane exchanges about the football and share prices and politics have come to this. Old dogs and new tricks, and a jobs market overflowing with the recently dispensed with. I'll give you templates, lists of possible skills. I mean, it might not come to it. This is just a performance review, but, you know, it doesn't hurt to be prepared. How many practice runs are filed in the cabinet, I wonder, as the itch between my shoulder blades gathers strength? So many have fallen before. All those oversized cards, the messages of missing you and good wishes and bright futures and pleasures to work with. People half known, well known, nodded to, emailed, reduced to a manila envelope jangling with coins. Through the window of the HR office, the thunderheads glower, all grey and black over the city, and I'm wondering if it'll be too much rain or not enough. We're all practicing, aren't we? These old dogs trying to learn new tricks without losing our comfy beds and our comfy cars and our favourite bones. Start practicing now. At my age? What? Night school and TAFE courses in AI programming? Uber driving until the car does it all by itself? Jump in a huge truck in an open-cut mine until the robot steers it? Learn to wipe chins and bums, literally, not figuratively. How big a step up is that anyway? Face to face with mortality, halfway there and closing with every year, death on the cards, in the cards, candles beyond measure being snuffed out with a huffing breath and a weekend away, feet up and cork out, or at least lid unscrewed. Even the bottles have changed. When was the last time I used a corkscrew? We're all screwed, no matter which way you spin it. Start practicing now. Duck and cover. What for? There is no escape in here. As if the desk would ever have stopped the flash and fallout, and yet, duck and cover. As if the tables piled up would stop the rounds tearing through that door. As if my electric car and beeswax wrap will stop the world from melting. Ask not for whom the bell tolls indeed. Start practicing to say goodbye. Look around, drink it in. It's shrinking faster than I can merit. When I was young, you've heard it all before, my walking to school, my drink driving without a care, my paying cash, my talking over the fence with the neighbour, a day at the footy without a cup of piss in my hair and a fist in my face, nights at the drive-in, the mortgage I could handle, the job I could trust. The goodbyes rack up faster than birthday cards, workmates, birds, beaches, friends, cancer mostly, family too. What can I do? We do. So few fighting for the beaches, the critters, as the oceans cook without even fish to fry. I'm practicing saying goodbye, but it's not getting easier. I'm waiting for the axe to fall, waiting for the retraining, waiting for the bank to foreclose, waiting for the door to slam and not reopen, for the birthday card not to come, because we're all so busy saying goodbye, or not saying goodbye, that we've forgotten how to say hello. The HR officer pulls at their collar, looks to the clock on the wall, still analogue, ticking down like a pendulum, a swinging axe, winnowing the low-growing stalks. Outside, the clouds are massing, and I imagine I can hear the rumble of the coming storm, the future hidden behind towering cumulus, casting such long shadows. My phone chimes, a vibration where my chest is tight and my heart thundering. "I've sent you the files," the officer says, "to practice with. You just don't know, do you?" I want to walk outside and breathe deeply of what passes for fresh air in the city. But the world has gone dark and the trees are tossing in the wind. I stand, gripping the back of the chair. The officer glances outside. "Looks nasty out there." "Looks nasty in here," I think. But decades of training, of practice, kick in, and I reach to shake hands instead. I'll go back to my desk, back turned to the Venetians drawn against the sky. Sneak a peek at the documents I've been sent. I'll go through the motions while I wait for the storm to break. So I hope that wasn't too depressing for you guys. Now, up next, we have Christine Pierce, and she has delved into the coronavirus theme and has managed to draw in an underneath-the-radar reference. Good on you, Christine.
This is a poem that was written, it's an epic haiku, that was written for our critique group this month, and it's called Coronavirus. In nature, as life, after the rain has fallen and the dust settled, animals come out of their nests and their burrows, and life starts again. The rain leaves puddles in indents and crevices over the surface of Mother Earth, home, that feed the deeper, vital structures of nature. What is to become of all too human nature? How will we be then toward each other, once the rain has stopped falling and the dust settled, and, tentatively, we venture outward, outside of our burrows, and life starts again? Will we act with kindness, love toward each other? Is the knowledge gained universal, understood? A social movement, like in times before? Or will that social movement be that we remain socially distanced, avoiding each other? Or more isolated than ever before, without any touch, feeling, lacking affection, tenderness as an expression of love, in kind, for our skins, bodies, to feel in our heart and in our soul, our being. Underneath the radar of human qualities as our characteristics, starving for closeness, Armageddon, say. Or will we embrace and love each other as all, together again, free to touch, kiss and caress each other with warmth, loving affection, with gratitude, feel kindness toward each other, and remembering in all ways and forever that we are here now, together in time, to be in relationship with each other, we, not to each other. Human nature under test, as Mother Nature enforces her laws, even her stipulations, on being human. Time tells the story of what being human means when the rain stops, ends, and life starts again, when we are free to go out together again. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. Even if your wonderful evocative poem did kind of break my heart a little bit, I'm also hoping that we can emerge on the other side of this to a kinder, gentler world where we're perhaps more compassionate and considerate of each other and the world around us. Up next, still on the theme of living under COVID-19 here in Ballarat, we have Not a Poem by Richard Minus One.
My name is Richard Minus One. I am not a poet. This is called New Dawn. Motoring over streets of Ballarat, well, prowling actually. My shoes shined, my caps front to back. Chaps outside Little Bridge salute as I bypass. My hodded up Subi is of only the highest class. I pump brakes a smidgen to let those to whom it may concern know about that. The prospects swoon at my capacity to win bread. There's room for two in the back. Save your Mikey bleep. Just please remain 1.5 metres from me, if you can. At all help that. Popped into Kmart, fighting off my followers as I searched the appropriate aisle for peanuts. Struck gold with limited edition choc-coated almonds. Charge out without so much as a glance at checkout. I'll meet my gang later. As we peruse only the finest establishments of Armstrong Street and lay waste to the various debates we encounter, deploying our hit list of criticisms and casting a critical eye over the patrons. Policing the place is my duty, you see. Please don't mistake me for some layabout. The world needs my protection. Got a certificate from SecDrol to that effect. Later we'll see what the streets have to offer. These alleyways provide perfect sanctuary for our more salacious instigations, should one of the prospects be so inclined as to lower themselves to our station. Things don't change much round here, you may believe. Pretty much what you get is what you can see. And with your hands on some Mary Jane or something more insane, the whole place can finally change. You got to make your own way. Strike gold here and you can anywhere, if I can only find the right vein. Sun wakes over Eureka Stockade, and our charades cascade for another day, only the scars remain. The rest swept away with the first train, and my escape's again delayed as the others take over the state of play. One day, that will never be me. Suggest something and I'll disagree.
And some lovely local colour from Richard there, although it did sound a little like a poem to me, but he might disagree. Next up, arachnophobes, brace yourselves. Kirsten McDermott has a story for you.
This is an older story, and it's one I'd almost forgotten about, but I came across it recently and I still quite like it, so I thought I would read it to you. You probably don't want to listen to it late at night just before you go to bed. It's called The Spider of the Shadow. You're curled on your left side in bed, reading a favourite paperback for the third or fourth time. Cocooned snugly beneath the quilt, you'd be almost completely comfortable if it wasn't for your left leg, bent awkward beneath you and rapidly growing numb. As you shift over onto your back, a sudden darting movement on the ceiling snares your attention. A spider. Small and black. A nondescript little creature about the size of your littlest fingernail. You yawn and turn the page in your novel. Spiders have never worried you, not like they did your sister. Remember how you would catch them in the garage in summer and slip them down the back of her dress? Long leggedy things with barely the weight of breath, but how she would shriek and cry and run to your father. How the belt would sting your thighs. Remember? You glance up at the spider again. It's scuttling across the white plaster surface in stops and starts. Dropping suddenly, it hangs suspended on invisible gossamer, tiny legs stuck from its body like bristles, then just as abruptly climbs back to the ceiling and darts forward a couple more inches. Pauses, drops again, and climbs. The shadow of the arachnid grows larger as its owner descends closer to the light from your bedside lamp, then almost vanishes as the creature scrambles back up again. Intrigued now, you watch the spider and try in vain to distinguish the gossamer line that holds it. Scuttle, pause, drop, hang, climb, scuttle. A little puppet show, moving in circles. Something in your mind clicks over, and you perceive the dance differently. Now the shadow is chasing the spider, growing ominously large as it pounces upon its stricken prey. Now the small creature is scrambling away in terror, fleeing in desperation from the relentless shape that pursues it. The soft glow from your lamp dissolves dimensions. The spider no longer appears to drop towards you, but merely pauses, crouching fearfully as its nemesis swells and lunges. You watch the illusion with growing fascination. Scuttle, pause, crouch, swell, pounce, scuttle. The shadow grows with each leap, its limbs stretching long and grey with hunger. A cat toying with a dying mouse, it pounces upon the little spider, only to release it again, allowing its prey to momentarily scramble away before attacking once more. The spider itself darts erratically across the ceiling in an effort to throw off its pursuer, but the shadowy wraith swells to immense proportions as the spider falls and lands on the bed. Illusion dispelled, you reach to brush it from the quilt. The creature doesn't move, dead. You prod it, cautious, careful brush with your index finger, and the spider crumbles beneath your touch like the remnants of burnt incense. You examine the ash that clings to your skin, soft, grey, almost greasy. You look back up at the ceiling. A large, dark shape is merging into the shadow of the cornice, pulling its lean appendages swiftly after it. A movement startles you and you turn. The paperback slips forgotten from your hand. As mute with terror, you watch your own shadow rising languidly from the far side of the bed.
Well, thank you, Kirsten. It was a creepy little piece to almost finish off the night for us. Next up, our final performer is Brooke Vogt. Now, normally at Words Out Loud, we focus on the spoken word, so we discourage singing. But Brooke sent us this lovely folky song, and it fits the theme, it fits the time we're living in, and we couldn't resist. So, to take us out for our inaugural Words Out Loud podcast, we're quite chuffed to throw to Brooke Vogt and her song, Better Get Used to It.
Better get used to it. This is a new normal. I better get used to it. I better get used to it.
Wow. Jason, are you sure we're not going to have songs at Future Words Out Loud?
I don't want to encourage them too much, but I have to say finishing off with a tune was pretty nice.
That was lovely. Thank you, Brooke. Let's all not get used to it. That's my vote. Let's just bear up and get through it, and let's make a better world on the other side.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that is our podcast for this first episode. As I said, we're going to be doing at least another one, maybe two or even more of these, basically once a month to replace our in-person spoken word open mic gig that we normally do here in Ballarat until we are in a position again to meet in person and get up on an actual stage and
have a drink together afterwards.
Oh, and have a drink together and maybe even hug. That would be great. So thank you all for listening.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for contributing and, you know, from your home to ours.
Absolutely.
And now back to yours. The May theme, for those who like a little bit of a writing prompt, I'm just going to let you know now. It's time after time. And I will put up a blog post shortly in the next couple of days to let you know the details for that. And we'll be looking for a due-by date of around Sunday, May 17, if you'd like to contribute some spoken word to the next spoken word podcast from Words Out Loud.
And we'll be publishing that on May 21st, which would have been our regular third Thursday of the month. And again, 5 minutes is your word limit. You don't have to go for 5 minutes. If you have a shorter piece, that's fine. MP3, and make sure it is your own work unless you have written permission from the author. So I think that's about it, Jason.
I think that is about it, Kirsten. I think that was a lot of fun for a first effort.
It was. It was a lot of fun putting it together, guys. We really look forward to getting some submissions over the next month. You can send them as soon as they're ready, but by May 21st, and we look forward to listening to them and putting them together into our second podcast.
Yes. Good night, everybody. Stay well.
Stay well. Stay safe. We love you. Bye.
Bye.